It's hour three of the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Caller says, I have a question in relation to the Enoch Burke situation. If Christ, who is actually God, were here on earth today and he were a solicitor or a barrister, who would he defend? Enoch Burke or the school or the court? Interesting question. Donald, could you mention about the bus stop at Reynolds Old Shop in Letterkenny? It's extremely dangerous there in the evenings at around 5:30. So many buses trying to get in and out around the same time with the darker evenings now. It's an accident waiting to happen. Could the council not have something better? Now, there is a plan to locate a bus shelter, a bus station, indeed a transport hub, close to the old bacon factory there, if you know the old bacon factory. On Pierce Road. Now, it's going to be a while before that is brought into effect. So at the moment, I think we are, as it were, stuck with that stop beside Old Reynolds. And it's not great because obviously a lot of traffic is using that station roundabout as well. And it's very close to that and it can cause all sorts of traffic backup. But we'll have to wait and see. Now, Caller says, please warn your listeners, there are increases in scammers phoning to help you protect your Amazon account, saying someone is making a big purchase, etc. That comes from Mary T. Sweeney. Look, I mean, I think I am getting those. Sometimes if you're in the car and the mobile goes and it looks like an Irish mobile number and you hit receive, you hear a voice going, this is Amazon or this is Revolut. Now, I'll be honest, I go, this is, and it's gone. Is hit the red button immediately. Just on any call like that, hit the red button. Don't, at this point, I don't even ask. As I said to someone recently, I am fairly sure that I will get to the point where I will start missing out on genuine calls because I'm blocking so many calls I think are scammers. And if that happens, so be it. Caller says, drunken drivers cause a lot of road accidents. That means an ambulance has to be called, maybe two or three. Let he who is without sin among us throw the first stone. So says a caller. Not don't quite see the relevance of that. Caller says, I have an appointment in Galway for 11:30 tomorrow morning. I don't drive, so I was trying to use public transport. I can't seem to find any bus service from Donegal that will get me there in time for my appointment. Any recommendations or other bus services I may not be familiar with? For a 11:30 appointment in Galway, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, caller. If anyone else knows of any public transport option that will get you to Galway for 11:30 in the morning, I am presuming the appointment is in the hospital. And if I'm incorrect in that assumption, I apologise. But if anyone knows of a way to get to Galway for 11:30 a.m. via public transport, please do let us know. If primary care were staffed with occupational therapy, which has been proven in the NHS to be essential to keeping people at home, that might help. Also, there's no rehab team available in the show, and that's available elsewhere in Donegal. Again, there are a lot of discussions with regards to how do we keep people at home and out of hospital. Now, let's go to Zoom because we're joined by historian Joe Kelly. Always a pleasure to speak to Joe. Joe, a very good morning to you.
Why good Donald, is the luck day, Jack. Good morning to yourself and to all listening in Highland Radio.
Amen to that. Let's talk about Sean Lamass, because a bill to rename Dublin Airport the Sean Lamass International Airport has moved on to second stage after it was introduced in the Dáil yesterday. And certainly when I was in school, and I was in secondary school between 1976 and 1981, I would have learned that the man responsible for the industrialisation of Ireland and the man responsible for the Irish economy was Sean Lamass. Almost as though we went from being an agrarian rural backwater to being a first world industrial state, and that was largely the work of Sean Lamass. That's pretty much what I was taught in school. Correct or no?
Partially incorrect. Obviously, he was a leader. He was the Taoiseach of the time, but there were other smart people around him. And maybe we'll talk about that as we're talking about him. But just from the outset, Lamass was born 1899 and he died in 1971. So that's his lifespan we're talking about. Look, there's no doubt that he was a titan of a politician in certainly from the 1920s right up until the late 1960s. There's no question about that. In fact, actually, their family history goes back to the Huguenots that were persecuted in France in the 1690s. They would have been known as Les Masters, and then they became known as Lamass later on, moving to Ireland, from Scotland to Ireland. But he was involved in 1916. He actually was a stretcher bearer for James Connolly. That was one of the last things he did before he left the GPO. He was only 16. So he was born at a time, or he was involved at the very cradle of the beginning of our Irish Republic and that ideology. He was in the GPO, you know, he fought the fight, so to speak. So he had that integrity and credibility always with him. Interestingly, actually, in 1916, he had accidentally killed his younger brother. It was a house accident. The revolver went off in the house. And later on, he was to lose his brother, Noel, who was taken, abducted and murdered by, we believe, the Free State pro-treaty side, taken up to Dublin Mountains and shot dead in cold blood. Again, he never showed any bitterness when he became Taoiseach towards the, you know, that whole history. He was very, very balanced that way. But he was a Sinn Féin TD in 1924, and that was the beginning of his life in politics, which he continued until his death. The point being was that he was behind, he was a very close ally of De Valera's. Sean McEntee, De Valera and himself were basically the founders of the Fianna Fáil party. In fact, he didn't want the name Fianna Fáil. He suggested the Republican Party. And as a compromise then, they called it Fianna Fáil, the Republican Party. And if you ever notice, it's not used really anymore, the Republican Party. But that was the name that he wanted on the party. In fact, what is really interesting is he arrived to Donegal to recruit the old Neil T. Blaney, not Neil T. Blaney, maybe that people are familiar with in Donegal, but his father, that'd be the great the grandfather of the present Blaney's, Niall
and Liam,
yeah. And he arrived in a car. Old Neil T. Blaney was out working in the field with corn. And Lamass jumps out of the car, walks around the field and goes over and asks him to join Fianna Fáil. So somewhere in Rosnakill, there's a field where Fianna Fáil was started, because it took some convincing, but Blaney did stand for him. And look, he later on then, he had various ministerial roles. He was the Minister for Industry and Commerce, but he became Taoiseach from 59 to 66. And it was during that time, you've got to understand, the 50s, it's known as the decade of the lost generation. On average, 44,000 people, young people, were leaving Ireland every year. There was no work, no employment. We had a very insular economy. And he was at the helm and realised we had to change from the De Valera idea of being independent and doing everything ourselves. He said, this isn't working. So he opened up the Irish economy. He had a lot of smart people behind him. T.K. Whittaker, who actually was called the person of the century. He only died there in 2017. He was 101. He was an absolute genius. He was a young civil servant. Lamass appointed him to the senior role within the Department of the Finance. And he had the idea of the IDA and about an open economy. He had the idea of, you know, moving towards what would later become the EEC and now the EU. So Lamass ran with all these things. Sweetman, who was the Minister for Finance, was very much in the same wave of thinking. Think of Donoghue Malley, who was the Minister of Education at the time, free education, free transport to schools. So there was lots of smart people at that time that realised that they could change the direction of Ireland. And in essence, those smart men and women of that time changed the trajectory, as you pointed out, from merely a farming country with agrarian philosophies and economics to a more open economy, foreign direct investment, realising that we could no longer be insular economy. So he definitely did all those things. There is no question about that, but he didn't do it on his own.
Yeah,
that's the stress.
Isn't it interesting that we're here now talking about how a politician got all the accolades and plaudits because of the vision and because of the actions of a civil servant who was progressive and forward moving and forward looking and brought the senior politicians along with them? When you compare it to today, when almost it's like we talk about the politicians having the ideas and the civil servants being the bureaucrats who hold them back, it seems if we had that level of sort of forward vision from our civil servants that we had with people like T.K. Whittaker, who knows what we could achieve?
Yeah, Whittaker was an absolute genius of a man. He even was able to get Terence O'Neill, that Lamass would go to the north to visit, the first kind of state visit between the north and the south. And again, he mastered that, not just once, but twice, trying to bed down a little bit of peace between the north and the south, the six counties and the 26 counties. He was very, very forward looking. But I have a great admiration for Sean Lamass, and I actually have read a biography of his many years ago by O'Sullivan, And really, really insightful things. In fact, what is very interesting, the five founding principles of Fianna Fáil that Sean Lamass laid out, I would argue that they're no longer in Fianna Fáil. But that's for another day's talking. Certainly the five founding principles are not to be seen, as far as I'm concerned as a historian, and I'm willing to argue that any day. But the point I have is he was paid by the state. He was a servant of the state. He got a pension and he got a damn good wage. Why do we need to call an airport after a politician? And I think it's the wrong message to send out. And I think this is a solo run, another Gavin moment, a presidential Gavin moment, whereby a few people in the upper room are making a decision for the rest of everybody else to have to live up to. I think it's a half-baked idea. About 36.7 million people, that's last year, passed through Dublin Airport. And we don't need a poster for Fianna Fáil over the airport celebrating one of their politicians. And I'm very clear in that. We could have somebody that's less divisive. How about having somebody with culture, somebody that has done something for humanitarian issues for Ireland? I'm thinking of the likes of maybe just Ronnie O'Sullivan that won a gold medal, or Dr. Pat O'Callaghan that won the first two gold medals for Ireland. I'm thinking of Wolfe Tone even, the father of Irish republicanism, who was a Protestant who tried to unite the Irishmen. How about the Wolfe Tone International Airport? How about Sonia O'Sullivan? What about Enya? What about Mary Fitzgerald? She was a trade unionist down in South Africa. There's a square called after her in Johannesburg. She was, and her pick handle is still there, displayed proudly in the museum in South Africa. Look, I'm only throwing out names. Enya, different other people. Why can we not celebrate people that have added of their own, with no pay, their cultural, humanitarian things, and celebrate what we really are as a country? And you, both of us are old enough to remember the old money. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the old fiver and tenner and £20 notes? What was unique about Irish money, and I detest the euro, the style of it. We had, for example, Donna Scotters on the £5 note, or Sister Catherine Macaulay. We had Yeats, a poet, on the £20 note. We had Dean Swift, a great writer, on the £10 note. You know, we celebrated our culture, our history, our language. Why could we not have that over the airport? Something that celebrates who we are. We don't need another politician.
Joe, not only am I old enough to remember the old money, Sean Lamass was Taoiseach when I was born. I mean, you know, that's how old I am. Sean Lamass was Taoiseach when I was alive. And right. De Valera was president at the same time.
Okay, well, I was just probably in the process of being born. I think
I have a few years on you, all right, Joe.
Okay, well, we're thereabouts. But look, it's not that I'm anti-Sean Lamass. I think this is, you know, it seems that they'll never learn. And this is a half-baked idea by somebody in Fianna Fáil, as far as I'm concerned, doing a solo run. I just wonder how the people of America would feel if they would decide to call it an airport, the Trump International Airport. Half of the people in America would be happy, the other half wouldn't be. And I think this is a situation like this again. How about giving it to someone, to honour some person that we can all unite behind and it not be political? And I think that's just unfortunate. You know what I would love to see? Maybe Fianna Fáil coming into a room and thinking about building 500 houses that we damn well need and calling it the Sean Lamass Housing Drive or something. Yeah. How about maybe building a bridge over Letterkenny for our traffic? The people are stuck in traffic. And I don't think there's anybody in Donegal that would object to calling that bridge the Sean Lamass Bridge. Do something. Don't take something that's already built and rename it. That's the easy one for them. Go and do something and honour the man's memory by doing something proactively. But it's the easy one for them in this. And I think they're just not going to learn here. And I personally am very, very angry with this kind of politics. It stinks. And I talked to you before about maybe the idea of, you know, where the phrase the stinking rich comes from.
Yeah.
In the medieval times, they were buried under the floorboards of the churches, and eventually their bodies would decompose and people go in to pray and say, what's this? It's the stinking rich. This is stinking politics. Ireland is bigger than this. Ireland should celebrate our culture, our heritage, our humanitarian, the good works we've done, famous, famous people, and not push it down to politics. And the question I really should be asking is, why is it for the Dáil and the politicians to decide this? Why don't they give the people the choice? And I saw a poll there, and just before I checked in, and there was over 4,000 votes, you know, what way, and over 3,000 of them were not wanting it to be called the Sean Lamass Airport. Not that people are against Sean Lamass, But there are other people maybe that are more wonderful in their contribution to our history that should be maybe honoured in that regard. And maybe just to take it back to brass tacks. At the moment, people are very, very annoyed with politicians. And I don't want to be getting anti any political party, but last year, our take-home pay was 2% less than the previous... Or this year, sorry, will be 2% less than last year. Yet the government, the IMF, the Irish, or the International Monetary Fund, has confirmed that our economy of the fastest growing economies, wealthiest countries in the world, will be about 9.7%. Let's break that down to simple politics. Imagine Amazon made 10% profit last year and turned around to its workers and says, thanks very much, we're going to give you all a 2% wage reduction. People are angry with politicians, and I think this is the wrong thing to do, to name it after a politician. Go a building a housing estate, go and build a few bridges, go and do some infrastructure, fix the homelessness, give the 5,000 homeless children of this country a place to live and call it the Shan Lamas housing drive or whatever it is. But don't put a political poster over our airport. I think it's below what we, the people of Ireland, deserve. That's my take on it, Donald.
Well, I have to be honest, I don't see what's wrong with Dublin Airport. I think Dublin Airport does exactly what it says on the tin, and I think it's a name that's served that airport well since its inception, and I see no particular reason to change it. Particularly as, and as far as I can see, I think partly this came, you know, from a joke just over a week ago when Dublin Airport themselves put up a little mocked-up sign on social media where they renamed it the Troy Parrott International Airport after the heroics in Budapest and against Romania the few days earlier in the Aviva in Dublin. And from what I can see, that seems to be the genesis of this. It sort of someone said, oh, that's an idea. Wait a minute, what about?
Well, Malcolm Byrne has run with it in the Dáil. He's a Fianna Fáil TD and is now at the second
stage. I know he has actually referenced the Troy Parrott thing, saying, oh, yes, this has given it a boost.
Yeah, well, he's mentioned Tri-Parrott, we would call the Metro Line or the New Lewis Line in Dublin after him. I think they're, again, this is just, we'll get orbit and we'll appease the general public at the moment because we're also happy with Tri-Parrott having scored those goals with Portugal and Hungary. But the point being is there's lots and lots of people out there that have done so much in the voluntary sector. You know people living today that's getting no pension and no wage from the state and are giving off their time and off their energy. Where do they get to be honoured? Where do they get to be respected? And I think it belittles us to honour a politician that has got his big wage and has got his big pension and then to give him the ego-caressing moment of naming an airport after him. I think the optics are all wrong. And particularly coming up to Christmas, when families are hard-pushed and the last thing they want to hear is a politician being given accolades, and it's self-congratulatory. And again, I think it'll be interesting, and I feel sorry for the likes of Charlie McConnell and Pat the Cope, because I don't believe those two men would think like that. There's obviously somebody doing a solo run in Fianna Fáil, and it's a back to being a Jim Gavin moment, and they don't seem to learn. They're not going to learn. But look, I think it would be a great thing to do is to open it out and ask the people of Ireland, you know, who would you want to mention and have reference to this airport? And as you say, Dublin Airport is wonderful, but a lot of the internet, John F. Kennedy, De Gaulle Airport, you have
both George, named after politicians, which undermining your argument in a way.
Well, and John F. Kennedy was because he was assassinated.
Yeah.
You understand?
I think, of course,
more than anything else. De Gaulle, who led France through a war and was in exile in London, and he did a lot more than just that. He was a great, great man himself, and the integrity was just impeccable. Like how he led France, and he had to go back again a second time to become their president when they were stuck, and he didn't want to, and he went back in and he helped heal France again a second time. So look, that lots of airports throughout the world are named after people or individuals, but you know, Ireland is a country of great culture, heritage, history. Let's celebrate that. If we're going to name an airport after someone, you know, I'm just thinking of our own county woman, Enya. Like, what a wonderful ambassador in the music. Think of people like Sonia O'Sullivan. I'm just throwing names like that out. There's a lovely man Bob Collins, who developed neonatal care, and he was taken out to Bergen-Belsen, the concentration camp after World War II, because he was so far advanced with medical care for young children and babies. And he did a terrible lot of work. He actually was the man behind helping Christy Brown write My Left Foot. How about calling it after him? I'm just using these as examples. People that gave off themselves nobly without any reward, and we should honour that kind of energy, that kind of spirit. What message is Fianna Fáil sending to our young people this Christmas to name an airport after a politician?
I'm going to leave you with a comment. I totally agree with Joe. These politicians are very well paid for the job they do. It's nothing more than boosting an ego, very much out of touch. Joe Kelly, a pleasure as always. Thank you very much indeed.
Imagine
why, Joe. Now, An Garda Síochána has launched Can You See Me Now? It's a nationwide road safety campaign designed to draw urgent attention to the critical importance of visibility on Irish roads, particularly for vulnerable road users, including pedestrians, cyclists, e-scooter drivers and motorcyclists. Delighted to say we're joined in studio by Inspector Sean McDade from the Roads Policing Unit in Donegal. Sean, good morning to you. Sean, in terms of the campaign, visibility is, I mean, when I was going to school, we were always told to wear reflective armbands. And in a sense, it hasn't changed. It's as important as ever it was.
Absolutely. It's all about road safety, being seen, being visible to other road users, and hopefully then reduce the fatalities and serious injury collisions.
Now, as well as obviously pedestrians, you've got cyclists and e-scooters referenced there as well. And that's an interesting one because I came across, I was driving into Letterkenny from Remelton on Thursday night last. It was around about 11:30. And there was an e-scooter just sort of on the side of the road out in the country that did have a red light on the back of it. But it was a sort of strangely placed red light. It took a while to notice what it was. And I realised what it was, obviously. But, you know, it just goes to show you have all these new sort of things on the road as well that we have to be aware of.
Well, e-scooters are a fairly new phenomenon over the last couple of years, and unfortunately this year two e-scooter riders have lost their lives. But the most important thing for the e-scooter riders is that they are seen. They're not allowed to use footpaths, so they have to use the roads. They have to have sort of reflective clothing so that they can be seen. They have to have an audible device like a bell or some sort of horn on their e-scooter as well. But the big thing is they have to be over 16 and they have to ride within the rules of the law.
Yeah. Now, in this instance, as I say, there was a very visible red light on the back of the scooter, but it was, what, six inches up off the road, maybe. And there was a light on the front as well. But the person themselves was wearing very dark clothing and didn't have anything reflective. And that probably wasn't the best of ideas.
Absolutely not. I think the more visible you are, the safer it is for you. And I appeal for parents of the children that are going out. Make sure they're wearing appropriate clothing so they can be seen.
The fact that 37 pedestrians have been killed on Irish roads this year, some of them older people with seven fatalities aged over 81. Now, obviously, some of those would have been during the hours of daylight, but some will have been at night.
Absolutely. Again, it's visibility. If pedestrians are out on the streets, especially around Donegal, rural roads, that they should be wearing appropriate clothing, high visibility jacket. They're available most Garda stations and all the public services centres.
In terms of cyclists and motorcyclists as well, the same message?
Same message. Cyclists, there's been 14 pedal cyclists killed this year on Irish roads. Motorcyclists, there's been 29. Most of those are Saturday, Sundays. And again, most motorcycles these days come with their dipped headlights automatically on. But again, appropriate wear. The easier a car can see you, the better it is for you.
Now, as part of this campaign, Garda social media pages, Facebook pages, other social media and web pages are turning neon yellow, and people may be wondering, what is this glaring thing I'm seeing when I look at a Garda social media page? This is what's behind it.
This is what's behind it. So for the next 48 hours, all Garda social media is neon yellow. It's just if somebody's scrolling, it catches their attention and they look at it a little bit more. and read into the Be Safe, Be Seen.
Now, obviously, we have discussed this issue with Grainne Doherty and others on the community information slot on a Tuesday, and very often Grainne is able to tell us that there are reflective armbands or the vests available in the Garda station and other Garda stations around the county. Is that the case at the moment? Can people avail of those reflective vests and armbands?
They can. They're free of charge, available in most Garda stations and the public services centres for the Donegal County Council.
And hopefully there's good stock there and people will take up on that. Sean, in terms of the Can You See Me Now campaign, as you say, everyone does need to be more visible, and it's almost, I suppose, what we need to do is start by saying, well, I'm okay, I'm visible, but then go, well, what more could I do? And sometimes if we're wearing one armband, maybe put on two. If we're wearing two armbands, maybe consider putting on the reflective vest. Maybe consider something on the feet as well. The more we do, the better it's going to be.
Absolutely. I think the vests are very, very good. They're very reflective. They can be seen from a distance if a car has lights on. If it's dusky hours, you're more visible as well. The pedestrians are more visible.
And that's an important one because, too, it's starting to get dark. I mean, effectively, at this point, there could be children walking home from school and it's sort of starting to get a bit dusky, particularly if it's cloudy. So even at that point, even at sort of 4, 4.30, 5 in the afternoon into the evening would be a good time to wear them.
Be an excellent time to wear them. Kids are very vulnerable coming home from school. They're well used to walking on the footpaths. But our message is a very simple, powerful message. It's a very powerful act. Just be seen.
Inspector Sean McDade, Community Engagement Inspector with responsibility for roads in Donegal. Sean, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. It's an important, and just to repeat, if someone doesn't have a reflective vest or whatever, they're available in your local Garda station. Call in, they'll be happy to cater for you and pass one on to you, and hopefully this will help prevent some deaths and injuries in our county and beyond into the future. Sean, thank you.
Thank you.
And that was Inspector Sean McDade there. Let's look at some of your comments. And we were speaking earlier about a bus to the hospital in Galway. Now, a caller says, Bus Éireann runs a bus to Galway Hospital. It leaves at 6:30 in the morning from Donegal Town. Hopes this helps. If the caller can get to Donegal Town, you'll get the bus down to the hospital. Now, I do occasionally have need to be in hospital by, well, I have to be there by 9 in the morning, so there's no public transport issue. So in my case, I'm becoming very conversant with various hotels and bed and breakfasts and so on down around the Galway area. But hopefully if you can get yourself to Sligo, or to Donegal Town by 6:30, there is a bus that goes from then. Now, we also do know, by the way, that there is a campaign going. There is a bus that leaves the hospital going to Galway from Letterkenny and from Sligo. Now, the problem is that bus doesn't get there until practically the afternoon. So there is a campaign on to get that service enhanced and to get more people involved in that service. Now, I want to change our tack completely, and we're going to discuss allergies. And there is a parents' campaign for new allergy therapies. It's being run by Allergy Action Ireland. Nearly one in three in this country now lives with a food allergy, yet the country has no national allergy policy. Joined on the line by Sheila Downs, who is a spokesperson for Allergy Action Ireland. Sheila, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Donald. How are you?
Very well indeed, thank you.
Thank you for having me on.
We're becoming more and more used to seeing gluten-free shelves in our shops, and we hear of people being lactose intolerant and people obviously being celiac and allergic to gluten and various others. We hear of shellfish allergies, etc., etc. There seems to be more awareness than ever now at the risk of food allergy, but you're saying that government policy as such isn't keeping pace with the level of knowledge that we're developing as a society.
Yes, that's right, Donald. I suppose our group, Allergy Action Ireland, we've come together as parents of allergy children, and I myself have two children with food allergies, and we formed our advocacy group, Allergy Action Ireland, to try and really raise the awareness on the severity of some of these allergies and the risk in terms of anaphylaxis. And I suppose, yeah, you've mentioned there's nearly one in three people in Ireland with an allergy. There's probably one in 20 with a food allergy, which equates to something like 5% of children living with an IgE-mediated food allergy. And that really, I mean, if you think about it, it's something like one to two children in every classroom in this country. So that's very significant in terms of a public health issue that has been undeclared really by our government. And we're sending our children into the classrooms with no education plan for our teachers, for our SMEs. There's no standardised care for them. I suppose we send our children in with their own auto-injector pens, so EpiPens. But really, we have to do the training as parents for those teachers, for those SNAs. There's no standardised approach there for them. So it's those types of pillars that we're trying to raise awareness of as part of Allergy Action Ireland.
Are there potential insurance issues if you actually get teachers and SNAs involved in this? Because I know, for instance, in a case where someone is receiving home help at home, a home help cannot help administer drugs. A home help is very restricted in what they can do from that point of view. Does this need to be looked at from the point of view of what a teacher or a school can do with regards to a potential anaphylaxis attack? Because there could be fears of insurance complications or even fears of legal action.
Absolutely, yeah, that fear is definitely there, and the apprehension, because I suppose schools are fantastic. They try and do the best they can with the resources they've been provided with. So we do get some schools that roll out their own emergency training for their staff, first aid training, but that first aid training doesn't necessarily include the training in terms of how to use EpiPens. And if this was rolled out nationally, they'd have far more certainty in how to use it. It wouldn't be something rushed coming from a parent that perhaps isn't a medical expert. You know, we're given training ourselves from perhaps our allergy consultant, but we're not trained to provide that training ourselves. So if there was a system there, a standardised approach in terms of the care for our schools, the training for our teachers, I think they would all feel a lot more confident in terms of administering these pens should it be needed. It's not something that's highly technical. You could train someone within, you know, 10 to 20 minutes. So it's something that can easily be done and easily rolled out by our government, but we don't have a national allergy strategy, and we don't have the availability of emergency kits within schools. So it's something that we really urgently need to see rolled out as a national standard, not a haphazard approach by parents.
Have you had contact with Minister Jennifer Carr-McNeill's department in terms of working towards such a strategy and working towards such a standardised policy within schools?
Yeah, so we actually were in the audiovisual room in Leinster House on Tuesday of this week, where we presented to a number of the TDs and the representatives of a number of the minister departments. And just this morning, we've had a discussion held through Senator Evan and Aquillan, who brought the issues and, I suppose, our pillars to the attention of the minister. So we've raised the questions, and we're really starting off on this journey now to try and raise the awareness to show the level of care that we're missing in Ireland, I suppose, especially for our children, our most vulnerable in society, and looking forward then to where we want to go, to have this national strategy, to have a standardised care plan, and ultimately to have treatment for our children, because there are treatments available internationally that aren't available here in Ireland that could reduce the risk of the severe anaphylaxis that some children go into if they do consume one of their food allergies. So we have been in touch, but we need to keep the pressure on. We have a lot more work to do. And I suppose that's what the Allergy Action Ireland group wants to try and achieve now over the next coming months and years, I suppose, ultimately.
We know that we often hear of an instance where on an airplane, someone will say, ladies and gentlemen, we have somebody on that has a severe allergy to nuts. So we would ask, please do not open any bags of nuts on the plane. We will not be serving nuts on the plane as a result of this. Does this happen in schools, and does there need to be more action taken to ensure that if someone in a school has a potential allergy or if someone in a school has a potential problem, that you don't have a child unwittingly opening a bag of peanuts or whatever beside them?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fear that as an allergy parent you live with every day, you can't control every facet. And again, it's the awareness raising, it's the knowledge. So if you think about the classroom environment today, we've had this fantastic rollout of the hot school meals across a lot of countries and our counties. And that's really needed and very much needed for a lot of families. But that brings a whole other sense of, I suppose, fear for us as allergy parents, because you could have one child at a desk that might be four children that has food allergies. So it might be to milk, might be to eggs, it might be to nuts. And they could have a child sitting beside them consuming the food that they're actually allergic to. And if you think about a child that might have a sesame seed allergy, which can be very, very significant in some children, if they touch the desk and there's just one, even one sesame seed on that desk, and they pick it up with their finger by accident, touch their mouth and consume it, or it even just touches around the mouth, that could be enough to trigger an anaphylactic reaction in an allergy child. And that's how serious it is. So it's the awareness around all of this, how we manage it, how we roll out the standard care and education within the school. Even things like the arts and crafts, if they're doing something like a bird feeder, there could be a mix there that has peanuts or other nuts in it. So there's all sorts of things within schools that are a risk to our children, and that's nobody's fault. You know, we have an increased number of children with allergies, unfortunately, so we now need to respond to that and find a way to manage it and to care for our children so that every child has every opportunity in life to live as a child should and to undertake these activities.
Do you find
feel left out ultimately?
Do you find that sometimes food allergies are almost wrongly dismissed as a lifestyle choice? There was a period where you'd hear almost comedians crack jokes about, oh yeah, someone is lactose intolerant, and it's like it's a lifestyle choice because these days it's hip to be lactose intolerant or it's hip to be gluten intolerant, and that almost in some way undermined what was very important work in coming to understand what are real and genuine medical issues.
Oh, I suppose just to make the distinction, something like lactose intolerance or gluten intolerance, that's very different to food allergies. So we have our 14 key allergens in Ireland that are listed, but then there are others, obviously, that other children or adults may be allergic to. But certainly it is something that has been in the past, I suppose, treated as, you know, kind of laughable. How could you be allergic to milk? How could you be allergic to eggs? You might have an intolerance, but it is that severe. It is that serious. We have had cases. We've had one unfortunate case in Dublin where a young girl died on the street because of her allergy. She consumed a small quantity of her allergen, and EpiPen was not administered through the pharmacy at that time. It is very serious. There are cases all the time within planes where, you know I've had it when I've been travelling with my children who have peanut allergy, as an example. We've had the announcement raised on the flight when we boarded. The air hostesses are fantastic. They'll re-announce it again and say that they won't sell the products containing nuts on the plane. But then this summer I had it where a parent of some other child in front of me opened a packet of peanuts, and her view was that, well, my child wasn't consuming it, so they should be fine. When that's not the case, you don't know in a really confined environment like that what could happen, and it's better to be safe than sorry. Anaphylaxis is life-threatening. Our children live with this life-threatening potential reaction all of their lives. So it is very serious.
Yeah, I recall that case in Dublin you referenced. As I recall, what happened was they didn't have the pen with them, and they didn't have a prescription, and they went into a pharmacy to try and just get one over the counter, and couldn't. Yeah. And there was a long legal discussion, and indeed a political discussion. I believe there was questions of legislation going through the Dáil after it, actually, because the pharmacist said, "Look, I cannot administer this without a prescription. No prescription was preferred, and sadly there was a death as a result."
There was, yeah. Now, the Minister for Health at the time did allow for a change in legislation whereby you can administer the EpiPen without a need for prescription. So that was monumental.
Yeah.
And that's such an amazing achievement. But we need to see that rolled out further. If you take the school setting again, for example, just because that's where we have such a huge number of kids, obviously, confined into one area. If there was a child there that suddenly became allergic for the first time to some food and had a severe reaction, there would be no pen available to administer to that child. So we're advocating for emergency kits to be available in all schools, not just where us as parents come in and dump, you know, up to 20 EpiPens into a box that's there for our child should it be needed. We want to see kits available, not just in schools, at GA pitches, available with defibrillators that have been rolled out everywhere now in the community. And that would just give such a sense of security to a lot of these kids that have severe allergies where it's inevitable. We're all busy. We're running here and there. You will forget your pens at some point, and your heart will sink, and you'll be, you know, an hour away from your home, 2 hours from your home. And what do? Do you get back in the car and drive back again? So to have that step forward will be amazing from our point of view.
Sheila Downs, thank you very much indeed. Quick reminder of our competition before we go to Buncrana to close out the show. You could win this week, thanks to our show sponsors, the Silver Tassie Hotel and Seascape Spa, an indulgent Yonka Delight package at the spa. It's valued at €155. It includes an aromatic steam session and cocoon room, a hot towel, foot and back cleanse, a Yonka back massage and hydrating facial, pressure point face and scalp massage, warm oil foot massage, finished off with snooze room relaxation time and refreshments. The whole package takes around 2.5 hours of pure luxury. To be in a chance with winning the prize tomorrow, Friday, Greg will be announcing the winner tomorrow, simply answer this question. Which of these is not traditionally associated with Christmas? Mistletoe, candy canes, or fireworks? Which isn't associated with Christmas? Mistletoe, candy canes, or fireworks? Text or WhatsApp your answer, name, and address to 086 60 25000. Adrian McMillar is an independent community representative in Buncrana, and Adrian wants to see the development of a dedicated creative arts hub in the area. Adrian, good morning.
Good morning, Donal, and good morning to all the listeners.
Adrian, you've made the point there is no shortage of creativity in Buncrana, there is no shortage of commitment to the arts in Buncrana. What there is a shortage of is space.
Yes, 100%, Donal. We have a fantastic hall up there already, St Mary's Hall, but it's at full capacity, nearly now. And I think just with speaking with so many groups in Buncrana, including artists, the theatre groups, singers, dancers, writers, artists, everyone, we all have the same aim that we need a culture centre in Buncrana.
Where would you see this being developed? Do you have a site in mind?
Yeah, well, we have a few sites in mind we discussed, but again, it'll be up to the council to ask for help. This will be dealt with at development stage, and the main outcome today is to get a commitment from everyone and a commitment from the council and the Minister for Arts to hopefully give us a culture centre, which is badly needed in Anishinaabe.
You've been, I'm sure, in touch with the various councillors around the area. Are you getting their support?
Yep. They're all support and they see the need for it also.
Would this be operated then by Donegal County Council, or how would you actually see this operating? Where would the ownership lie?
Well, according to research, like the partnership, the cultural centres around the country is run by different partnerships. So like it could be between the council, the local community, the local professionals run it as well. So again, it'll be probably similar run to those across the country, like Carrick and Shannon, Cork, the Regional Cultural Centre in Letterkenny.
And you would see this as a nexus for the arts that would feature, and with the RCC in Letterkenny, as you've referenced, it does indeed have occasional concerts and presentations, but there's also regular exhibitions. It's used as a rehearsal space. It's used as a meeting space. And you would want that sort of multifunctional element to it in Buncrana as well, that is somewhere where people can go to rehearse. Maybe people go and paint, have studios, etc. So it's not just a gig venue. It's more than that.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, this hub would provide rehearsal rooms, studio workshop spaces, storage spaces, which is badly needed, technical facilities, and like a small performance black box theatre as well.
Adrian, it's a very interesting idea, and we wish you well with it. You're working, I'm sure you'll get the backing, as you say, of the local members of council. You'll also get the backing, I'm sure, the leader programme in a show and development, and others will be taking an interest in this too.
Yeah, hopefully. Over the next couple of weeks now, I'll be in touch with everyone and all the community groups and all the theatre groups as well, and we'll hold a meeting and get the ball rolling.
Yeah, I know there was use of Tullyarvan Mill for things like this over the course of the past couple of years. Are there other resources in the area that can be used more? As you say, St Mary's Hall is there. We also see the return of gigs to the old cinema, which is great to see as well. So, I mean, it does appear to be improving. Are there facilities like Tullyarvan Mill that could be used more in the meantime?
Well, the Plaza Buncrana's there as well, but all the community halls and all the community theatres are really, really busy, which is great to see. It's not a complaint. There's so much art groups and they're really successful and lots of people going.
Yeah.
And like it's great for their mental health, it's great for youth community development, it's great. There's so many benefits to the arts and culture scene. So, yeah.
Adrian, thank you very much indeed. Adrian McMillar there speaking to us from Buncrana. Let's take one or two final little things. Carter says, I 100% agree with Dr. Joe regarding renaming things that have already been built and named. I'm thinking of the Letterkenny and the Pierce Road, used to be the railway road. The Polestar roundabout should have been called the Port roundabout. Another caller, he is so right. It's the most sense I've heard in a long time. He is saying what we're all thinking. What about Sister Stan, a woman who'd be truly deserving of something named after her? We were speaking about Be Safe, Be Seen. A caller says people dressed in black heading toward Milford past Lidl. They're an accident waiting to happen. Garthy in Milford need to be on the lookout. And just to let you know, there will be confidential shredding on tomorrow, Friday, at Letterkenny Shopping Centre. It's in association with United Shredding Company and Letterkenny Rotary Club, all for just a donation to the Donegal Down Syndrome Association. You can see your confidential documents shredded in the USL machine. And that brings the programme to a close, my friends. As always, it's been an absolute pleasure presenting this morning. Greg's back in the hot seat as usual tomorrow. John Breslin's up next around the Northwest. Thanks, as always, to Shannon and especially to Caroline Orr for producing and holding my hand as always. As I say, Greg's back tomorrow. John's on around the Northwest after the news. But for myself, Donal Kavanagh, have a very good day.